Imagine you are a city planner in Georgia, right? You are looking at a data set of two adjacent counties.
Okay, so you're just looking at standard demographic data.
Exactly. And they have identical median incomes, identical demographic breakdowns, and like even identical poverty rates.
But I'm guessing the outcomes don't match.
Right. One county has a vastly higher bachelor's degree attainment rate than the other.
Oh, wow. Yeah, standard economic models would just tell you that variance is statistical noise.
Yeah, exactly. They say, well, the covariates are controlled for, so any residual difference is just random error.
Right, but intuitively, you know that's completely false.
You absolutely know it's false. You know the underlying geological bedrock of that county, its unmeasurable history, its deeply rooted institutional culture is actively shaping that outcome.
Right, it's spatial context.
Exactly. But the problem is when you run that data through a standard local spatial regression, that unmeasured spatial context doesn't just sit quietly in the background.
No, it really doesn't. It
Yeah.
actively sabotages your regression model.
Yes. It mathematically confounds the very variables you are trying to measure. So we are basically breaking the diagnostic X-ray machine today.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, so for those of you listening, consider this an advanced study session. It's targeted at graduate students in economics, spatial statistics, and quantitative geography.
It's definitely a heavy topic, but a crucial one.
Definitely. Our source material today is a 2026 paper by Xiping Lai and A. Stuart Fotheringham. It was published in the Annals of the American Association of Geographers.
Titled Spatial Context as a Time Invariant Confounder, a Fixed Effects Extension of MGWR.
Right. And the mission for this deep dive is to rigorously define spatial contextual effects, examine how they introduce omitted variable bias in local spatial models, and then detail the methodology.
Specifically, the steps to implement multiscale geographically weighted fixed effects regression, or MGWFER, to resolve these endogeneity issues.
Exactly. So to dismantle standard local spatial modeling, we really have to first build a rigorous conceptual foundation.
Right, we need to talk about causality and confounding within geographic processes.
Yes, and the paper roots this deeply in counterfactual reasoning, which traces back to David Hume, right?
Yeah, Hume's classic definition of causality. It's basically the assertion that without the first object, the second never would have existed.
Right, and in applied econometrics, that translates to the potential outcomes framework.
Exactly. And the fundamental problem of causal inference here is that observing two alternative states of a single spatial unit simultaneously is impossible.
Right, because you can't observe a single census tract that simultaneously receives a localized economic stimulus and also doesn't receive it.
Exactly. We can't do randomized controlled trials in spatial social sciences. You can't just randomize which cities get rivers or historical rail lines.
Right, that would be impossible. So we have to rely heavily on observational data.
Yeah, and treating observational data as a quasi-experimental design requires strict conditioning on all confounders.
Which brings us to the big one. In geography, the ultimate unmeasured confounder is place.
Yeah, but place is functionally useless as a mathematical parameter. I mean, you can't just plug place into an equation.
Right, it has to be operationalized. And the authors categorize spatial contextual effects into three distinct mechanisms. So let's formalize these.
This classification is super critical for the methodology we'll discuss later. So first, we have intrinsic contextual effects.
Okay, what does that mean exactly?
This describes how unmeasured attributes of a place directly affect the outcome variable.
Like the baseline condition.
Exactly. If we use the metaphor of a landscape, the intrinsic context is the geological bedrock.
Ah, okay. So it's the historical, cultural, or environmental condition that exerts a constant gravitational pull on the outcome.
Right, regardless of the variables built on top of it. Then second, we have behavioral contextual effects.
And how is that different?
This operationalizes how place affects the elasticity between the outcome y and each measured covariate, the x variables.
So it's the spatial heterogeneity of the slope.
Precisely. A localized demographic shift might yield a specific behavioral response in a dense urban core, right?
Yeah.
But that identical demographic shift might yield a completely different response in a rural community.
Okay, that makes sense. So intrinsic context modifies the intercept and behavioral context modifies the local slopes.
Exactly.
So what is the third mechanism?
Indirect contextual effects.
Oh.
And honestly, this is the mechanism that induces catastrophic model failure.
Oh, wow. How so?
Well, this defines how place affects the levels of the covariates themselves.
Wait, so the spatial context isn't just influencing the outcome?
No, it is actively determining the spatial distribution of the independent variables you are feeding into the model.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Let's apply this to the housing price and public transit analogy from the text to make the endogeneity mathematically concrete.
Good idea.
Suppose we are modeling whether improving public transit, the treatment, increases housing prices, the outcome.
Okay, standard setup.
Right. And a naive regression yields a strong positive coefficient. However, the unobserved confounder is the baseline wealth of the county's residents.
Right, because wealthier counties possess higher baseline housing prices due to historical demand.
Exactly, which establishes the intrinsic contextual effect. But concurrently, wealthier counties generate greater municipal tax revenue.
Right, giving them the fiscal capacity to fund the transit improvements in the first place.
Exactly. That establishes the indirect contextual effect. The unmeasured wealth influences both the treatment and the outcome.
And if the model fails to condition on this unmeasured spatial context, a standard linear regression just absorbs that indirect effect into the transit coefficient.
Wow. So the estimated causal effect of the transit system is spuriously inflated.
Yes. The model attributes the variance caused by the unmeasured wealth to the transit variable.
I want to translate this into the language of directed acyclic graphs, or DAGs, to look at the error term.
Sure, let's look at the math.
If spatial context is inherently unobservable, it physically manifests in the regression's error term.
Which violates the core assumption of strict exogeneity.
Right, where the expected value of the error term, conditional on our covariate matrix X, must equal zero.
Exactly. Let's look at the linear model. Y equals X beta plus C plus epsilon.
Okay, so here, C is the unmeasured intrinsic spatial context, and epsilon is the stochastic error.
Right. And because C cannot be observed, the model absorbs it into a composite error term, mu, which equals C plus epsilon.
Got it. And the violation occurs precisely because of that backdoor path.
Exactly. We established via the indirect contextual effect that the spatial context C determines the covariates X.
So the composite error term mu is now systematically correlated with X.
Yes, you have classical endogeneity. Ordinary least squares will just fail to recover the true parameter value.
It'll just yield biased estimates.
Completely biased.
Now, if you're working with spatial data right now, your immediate thought is probably, why not just use a spatial error model or a spatial lag model and call it a day?
Yeah, that's the standard reaction. Spatial econometrics has an entire library of models designed to handle spatial dependence.
So why do these traditional models fail to solve this specific endogeneity problem?
Well, it comes down to the distinction between spatial dependence and spatial heterogeneity.
Okay, break that down.
Spatial error models, or SEMs, are designed to handle spatial autocorrelation in the error term.
Like situations where the error of unit I is correlated with the error of unit J.
Exactly. Mathematically, SEMs can be viewed as a special global case of what we are about to discuss.
Where filtered autoregressive residuals act somewhat like a baseline intercept.
Right. However, SEMs and spatial lag models generate global coefficients.
Meaning they assume a single universal slope across the entire study area.
Yes. They cannot capture the spatial variation in behavioral contextual effects.
Ah, so they assume a one-size-fits-all elasticity.
Precisely. Furthermore, traditional spatial econometrics treats unobserved spatial factors as statistical nuisances.
Just something to be minimized via spatial weighting matrices.
Yeah, rather than explicitly modeling the intrinsic contextual effects as variables of primary geographic interest.
Which brings us to the models that actually do attempt to measure local heterogeneity, specifically multi-scale geographically weighted regression.
Right, MGWR.
MGWR generates location-specific parameters. It fits local regressions by borrowing data from nearby areas weighted by distance.
And the multi-scale innovation allows different spatial processes to operate at different scales.
Right, by assigning covariate-specific bandwidths optimized via a backfitting algorithm.
Exactly. It captures behavioral context through spatially varying slopes and intrinsic context through local intercepts.
But the source text argues MGWR is fundamentally flawed when causal inference is the goal.
Yes, the flaw is actually embedded in the borrowing mechanism itself.
Wait, really? How?
MGWR implicitly assumes strict exogeneity. It assumes the covariates are independent of the unmeasured factors.
Let's formalize the hypothetical example of the local regression for County A from the text.
Okay, sure. To estimate the parameters for County A, the kernel borrows data from neighboring counties B, C, D, and E.
Right. And the unstated mathematical assumption in this local subset is that the intrinsic contextual effect, the unmeasured geological bedrock, is constant across all these borrowed observations.
Exactly. But if counties B and C possess deeply rooted urban cultural preferences, and counties D and E possess entrenched rural agricultural histories,
they are fundamentally incomparable units.
Yes. MGWR lumps them into a single local regression pool, completely failing to condition on those unmeasured heterogeneities.
Because it fails to hold the spatial context constant across the local bandwidth, it fails at the requirement for causal identification.
Exactly. It just fails.
So to salvage local spatial modeling, the authors look to standard causal inference toolkits.
Right. We need an identification strategy that addresses unobserved confounders within spatial structures.
If we evaluate instrumental variables, regression discontinuities align, and propensity score matching, they all fall short for this specific application.
Yeah, let's look at why. PSM requires the conditional independence assumption.
It assumes no unobserved confounders exist, right?
Yes, which directly violates the entire premise of intrinsic spatial context.
Okay, what about 5?
5E requires an instrument that satisfies the exclusion restriction, meaning it affects the outcome strictly through the treatment.
And finding a valid instrument for multiple continuous socioeconomic variables simultaneously across complex spatial systems is statistically improbable.
Highly improbable. And RDD requires sharp geographic policy cutoffs, which does not apply to continuous gradient data.
Okay, furthermore, spatial data inherently violates the stable unit treatment value assumption, or SUTVA.
Right. Traditional causal models assume the treatment assignment of one unit does not affect the potential outcomes of another unit.
But spatial systems are defined by peer effects, information diffusion, and spillover.
Exactly. The outcome in County A is dynamically linked to the conditions in County B.
That leaves us with panel models, specifically the individual fixed effects panel model. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, the theoretical connection here relies on decomposing the error term in longitudinal data.
Right, into a time-invariant unobserved component, denoted as alpha I, and a time-variant random error, epsilon I.
By definition, the deep-rooted bedrock of intrinsic spatial context, historical settlement patterns, persistent institutional cultures, foundational topography is generally stable over a standard study period.
So because it does not fluctuate year over year, it perfectly satisfies the mathematical definition of an individual fixed effect.
That is the conceptual bridge.
Wow. So by fusing the local spatial flexibility of MGWR with the time-invariant confounding control of a fixed effects panel model, we arrive at multi-scale geographically weighted fixed effects regression.
Yes, MGWFER. Let's examine the model formulation.
Okay, lay out the matrix equation for me.
The matrix equation is defined as Y equals F sub X of X plus F sub D of D plus epsilon.
Okay, break that down for the listener.
This structure combines additive terms with local coefficients, the spatially varying slopes represented by F sub X of X, with global coefficients representing the fixed effects intercepts, denoted by F sub D of D.
Oh, I see. So it sweeps out the time invariant fixed effects globally while allowing the behavioral slopes to vary locally across space.
Exactly.
Wait, I have to challenge this assumption. The entire foundation of MGWFER relies on the premise that intrinsic spatial context is time invariant.
Right.
But what about rapid urban restructuring? Gentrification can entirely rewrite a neighborhood's culture, demographics, and institutional baseline in the span of, like, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's a very valid point.
If place is actually highly dynamic, doesn't this entire theoretical framework collapse under its own assumptions?
That is an excellent methodological challenge, and it really highlights the strict boundaries of causal identification.
So the model would break.
Yes. If the unobserved spatial context undergoes rapid structural shifts during the observation period, the model will produce biased estimates.
So how do the authors address this?
Well, this is why the first rigorous identification assumption for MGWFER is that the spatial context must be strictly time invariant over the specific study period.
Ah, okay. So if you are modeling a rapidly gentrifying district over a decade, alpha, I will fail to capture the changing baseline.
Exactly. The researcher must ensure the temporal window of the panel data is short enough that the intrinsic context remains stable.
Or that the specific geographic units studied are insulated from rapid structural shocks.
Precisely. And that ties into the remaining identification assumptions.
Okay, let's go through those.
Assumption 2 is strict exogeneity conditional on the fixed effects.
Meaning once the time invariant bedrock is factored out, the remaining time variant random error must be uncorrelated with the explanatory variables.
Correct. Assumption 3 dictates no time-varying unobserved confounders.
So a sudden, unmeasured, localized policy shock in year 3 will bias the slopes.
Yes, it will. And finally, Assumption 4 requires the model parameters of causal slopes to be constant over time.
Why is that?
To allow the pooling of longitudinal data across periods for local estimation.
Okay, assuming the data generating process meets those strict criteria, we can detail algorithm 1, the two-stage estimation process.
Right. Now, the most direct econometric approach to estimating a fixed effects model is the least squares dummy variable approach, or LSDV.
Okay, and how does that work conceptually?
You simply append an n-by-n identity matrix of dummy variables to your covariate matrix.
Essentially assigning a binary indicator for every single spatial unit.
Exactly.
But a graduate student looking at the linear algebra of local spatial weights immediately sees the problem with LSDV in an MGWR framework.
Yeah, multicollinearity and the severe erosion of degrees of freedom.
Right. If you have 3,000 spatial census tracts, you introduce 3,000 dummy variables.
Exactly. In a global OLS model, the matrix inversion X transpose X might survive if the total observation count NT is massive.
But MGWR does not run a single global regression.
Yeah, it runs thousands of localized regressions using subsets of the data defined by the spatial kernel bandwidth.
So if a local bandwidth only encompasses 100 observations and the design matrix contains 3,000 dummy variables,
the matrix becomes rank deficient. It is singular and cannot be inverted.
The local regression physically breaks.
Precisely. To bypass the rank deficiency trap of the LSDV method, the authors employ the within transformation estimator.
Okay, so this mathematically partitions the estimation into two stages.
Yes. Stage 1 purges the spatial confounding via demeaning.
And stage 2 recovers the intrinsic contextual effects algebraically.
Exactly.
Let's walk through the exact calculus and algebra of stage 1 step by step, because this is the core of it. How is the time invariant context purged mathematically?
Okay, so step 1 initiates the within transformation.
What does that look like?
For every discrete spatial unit I, we calculate the temporal mean of the dependent variable y sub it across all time periods t, resulting in y bar sub I.
Got it. You just average the outcome for that location across time.
Right. And then we execute the same temporal averaging for every independent variable x sub kit, resulting in x bar sub kit.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then we subtract this unit-specific temporal mean from the raw observation for every single time period.
Ah, generating the demeaned variables. So y double dot sub it equals y sub it minus y bar sub I.
Exactly. And x double dot sub kit equals x sub kit minus x bar sub k.
Now here's the magic trick, right? Because the intrinsic spatial context, alpha I, is constant across time by assumption.
Its temporal mean is equal to itself.
So when we subtract the mean equation from the raw equation, alpha I minus alpha I equals zero.
Exactly. The unobserved spatial confounder is mathematically annihilated from the data set.
That is so elegant. But this brings us to step 2, which introduces a computational friction unique to the backfitting algorithms of MGWR.
Yeah, unfortunately, you cannot just feed the demean data straight into the local spatial kernel.
Why not?
You must standardize these demean variables using their standard deviations. This is a critical methodological nuance.
Okay, explain why standardization is necessary here.
Well, MGWR relies on iterative backfitting to optimize the covariate-specific bandwidths. The spatial weighting functions, whether Gaussian or bisquare kernels, calculate geographic decay.
Right.
If the input variables possess vastly different numerical scales, say, population density in the thousands versus an index score bounded between 0 and 1.
Oh, I see. The optimization algorithm will fail to converge on stable bandwidths.
Exactly. The variables must be standardized to a mean of 0 and a variance of 1.
To ensure the kernel weighting applies uniformly across the parameter space.
Precisely.
Step 3 is the execution phase. Mm. We run the standard MGWR calibration using these standardized demeaned matrices.
Yes. And because the confounding spatial context was annihilated in the within transformation, the local regression matrix now produces unbiased, standardized local coefficients.
Free from omitted variable bias generated by those time invariant factors.
Exactly.
Then step 4 concludes the first stage.
Right. The researcher must convert the standardized local coefficients back to their original unstandardized scales.
And how is that achieved computationally?
It's straightforward. You multiply the estimated standardized coefficients by the ratio of the standard deviation of the raw dependent variable to the standard deviation of the respective raw independent variable.
Using the deviations you saved from step 2.
Exactly. And we now possess the unbiased, spatially varying causal slopes.
Okay, but the operation in step 1 created a void.
What do you mean?
Well, we mathematically annihilated the intrinsic spatial context to save the slopes. How do we measure the intercept if we erased it?
Ah, right. This is stage two, recovering the intrinsic contextual effects.
Okay, so this is step five. Walk me through it.
It relies on algebraic substitution. We utilize the unstandardized, unbiased local slopes from step four, denoted as beta hat subkey.
Okay.
We also retrieve the temporal means, y bar sub I and x bar sub chi, that we calculated during step one.
Right.
By substituting these unbiased slope estimates back into the time-averaged equation, we can isolate the individual fixed effect. Let me make sure I'm following. The intercept alpha hat sub I is equal to the temporal mean of y minus the sum of the temporal means of each x multiplied by their respective unbiased local slopes.
That is exactly the algebra. Yes.
Wow. So through this algebraic backout, we recover the precise magnitude of the intrinsic spatial context for every location without ever triggering a dummy variable matrix inversion.
Exactly. It's computationally brilliant.
The theoretical math is definitely sound, but we need to address the computational realities here. MGWR is infamous for its computational intensity.
It is notoriously slow.
Right. And the bottleneck is always the projection matrix or the hat matrix, denoted as A sub K.
Yes. In standard cross-sectional MGWR, this matrix maps the observed values to the fitting values, requiring iterative inversions of N by N spatial weighting matrices.
So if we are now using longitudinal panel data, where N locations are observed across T time periods, the matrix expands to NT by NT.
Right.
Inverting a matrix that scales multiplicatively with time for every variable across every backfitting iteration should require prohibitive processing power. You'd think so, yes. It would crash most machines.
So how did the authors optimize the algorithm to prevent computational collapse?
They recognized a fundamental geometric truth about panel data in a spatial context.
Which is?
The geographic distance between a location in year one and that exact same location in year five is zero.
Oh, of course. It hasn't moved.
Right. Traditional data structures might treat these as distinct rows in a massive NT by NT matrix, forcing the kernel to calculate redundant spatial weights.
So they redefined it.
Exactly. The methodological shift here redefines bandwidth. In traditional MGWR, bandwidth dictates the number of data points included in the local kernel.
But in MGWFER, bandwidth refers strictly to the number of locations.
Yes. The algorithm ensures that every local regression utilizes a perfectly balanced panel of data from neighboring regions.
Ah. Consequently, the spatial weighting matrix W sub I is derived solely from the N spatial locations.
Exactly. The time-consuming spatial weighting calculations and matrix inversions only need to be processed once per spatial unit n, rather than iteratively for every observation nt.
That optimization reduces the computational complexity back to the level of cross-sectional MGWR while processing full panel data.
It's a huge breakthrough for spatial analysis.
So the math is elegant in theory, and the computational hurdles have been bypassed, but theoretical math can easily fall apart when applied to noisy, multidimensional data.
That's why we need a sandbox.
Exactly. We need to control the rules of physics to verify that the within transformation isn't just stripping out the signal along with the noise.
Which leads to section five, validating the model through a simulation study.
Right. The authors construct a data generating process, or DGP, where the true causal relationships are hard-coded.
If the models cannot uncover the truth in a programmed sandbox, they are completely useless in the real world.
Let's outline the sandbox. The DGP is a 30 by 30 spatial grid representing 900 distinct locations observed across three time periods.
And the critical element here is the unobserved spatial context, alpha.
Right. How did they program that?
The authors explicitly program this confounder to vary horizontally across the grid.
Okay, so imagine a topography map where the elevation steadily increases from the west coast to the east coast, forming distinct vertical contour lines of intensity.
Exactly. Then they generate four covariates. Variables x1, x2, and x3 are programmed with true causal effects on y.
And to test the backfitting multi-scale capability, the spatial parameter surfaces of these variables are engineered with high, medium, and low spatial heterogeneity, respectively.
Correct. But the true test of the model is variable x4.
Ah, x4 is the placebo.
Yes. It is a mathematical trap designed to bait endogeneity.
So X4 is programmed to be highly correlated with Y, but entirely through the backdoor path of the unobserved spatial context.
Right. The context generates X4, and the context generates Y.
Meaning the direct causal effect of X4 on Y is absolute zero?
Exactly. If a model fails to control for omitted variable bias, it will falsely flag X4 as a highly significant causal agent.
Okay, so let's look at the results. How did the global models do?
The global models failed the sandbox test immediately.
Both pooled OLS and cross-sectional OLS?
Yes. They significantly underestimated the variance driven by the spatial context.
Because OLS cannot model local heterogeneity, so it just forced that unexplained variance onto the covariates?
Exactly. It systematically overestimated the causal effects of X1, X2, and X3.
And more importantly, OLS fell for the placebo trap.
It did. It falsely assigned a massive, highly significant coefficient to X4.
So it fundamentally conflated correlation with causation due to unobserved confounding.
Yes, completely failed.
Now we pivot to the local spatial models. How did standard MGWR and pooled MGWR fare against the new MGWFER framework?
Well, let's start with MGWFER. It successfully recovered the program parameters.
It achieved an R-squared of 0.999.
Yes, it perfectly replicated the varied spatial bandwidth scales of X1, X2, and X3.
And crucially, MGWFER recognized the placebo.
It did. Its local parameter estimates for X4 hovered tightly around zero across the entire 900-cell grid.
The within transformation successfully annihilated the time invariant confounder, closing the backdoor path and correctly identifying the complete lack of a causal relationship.
Exactly. But standard MGWR didn't do so well.
Yeah. The visualizations of standard MGWR and pooled MGWR in the text are fascinating because the failure is not random noise.
No, it is highly structured.
Their parameter estimates for the covariates show massive, distinct vertical bias patterns. Why vertical?
This illustrates the physical mechanics of spatial confounding.
Unpack that for me.
Recall that the true unmeasured spatial confounder was programmed to vary horizontally the west-to-east elevation gradient.
Right.
Standard MGWR failed to condition on this horizontal confounder. Because the model's localized spatial weighting kernels borrow data radially, the unmeasured horizontal gradient actively distorted the local neighborhood calculations.
So the math had to project that unexplained variance somewhere.
Exactly. It systematically forced the confounder's horizontal spatial structure onto the estimation bias of the covariates,
manifesting as severe orthogonal or vertical distortion in the parameter surfaces.
Yes, it is a mathematical reflection of the ignored topography.
And the magnitude of the error is staggering. The true programmed range for the intrinsic contextual effects, the intercept, was bounded between 0 and 50.
Right, but standard MGWR estimated local intercepts ranging wildly from negative 17 to positive 17.
It completely failed to map the reality of the special process.
It did, which necessitates the transition to real-world application in Section 6.
Because simulated sandboxes are clean, but empirical data is messy.
Very messy. So the authors apply the framework to analyze the determinants of educational attainment.
Specifically, the percentage of residents holding a bachelor's degree across the 159 counties of Georgia.
Right. They compiled data from the 2016 to 2020 American Community Survey.
Okay, what's in the covariate matrix?
It includes the natural log of population density, percent foreign-born, percent African-American, percent rural, average household income, and percent living in poverty.
And all variables are standardized per the methodology.
Yes. The full 5-year panel is utilized for MGWFER, while a 2018 cross-section is extracted to run standard MGWR as a baseline comparison.
Let's focus on the magnitude shift between the two models. What are the policy implications when a state government uses standard MGWR versus MGWFER to analyze educational attainment?
The implications are profound.
How so?
Standard MGWR and pooled MGWR estimated local intercepts hovering tightly around zero, ranging from just negative 0.3 to positive 0.2.
In real terms, this suggests the intrinsic spatial context of a Georgia county exerts a negligible negative 1.5% to positive 1.0% influence on bachelor's degree attainment.
Right. If a policymaker reads that output, they conclude that place does not matter.
They conclude that educational outcomes are driven entirely by contemporary demographics and income.
And therefore, place-based historical interventions are a waste of state funds.
But MGWFER unmasks the hidden bedrock. When the within transformation controls for the confounding, the true magnitude of the spatial context is revealed.
Yes. MGWFER estimates intrinsic contextual intercepts ranging violently from negative 4 to positive 4.
Wow. That translates to a massive negative 20% to positive 20% influence on educational attainment driven strictly by time-invariant spatial context.
Exactly. The underlying history, deeply rooted institutional quality and foundational culture of these counties exert a 20% gravitational pull on education that standard models completely fail to detect.
Let's take that a step further into the causal slopes. The paper highlights a glaring empirical correction regarding the poverty variable.
Yeah, standard MGWR produced a deeply confounded slope.
It did. MGWR and PMGWR estimated a statistically significant positive relationship between poverty and educational attainment in specific regions of Georgia.
Wait, positive? The standard model suggested that as poverty increased, bachelor's degree attainment increased.
Yes. This defies fundamental economic theory and common sense.
Completely. And the error occurred because poverty is highly correlated with the unmeasured historical spatial context of those specific counties.
Exactly. By failing to condition on the context, the model produced a spurious inverted slope.
But MGWFER, by correctly closing the backdoor causal path, corrected this inversion.
Right. It consistently estimated the theoretically sound, statistically significant negative causal relationship between poverty and education across all 159 counties.
That's a massive win for the model.
As we synthesize these findings for our graduate student audience, what is the ultimate methodological takeaway?
The core imperative is that associations between spatial context and covariates are inherent, unavoidable properties of all geographic data.
Indirect contextual effects are ubiquitous.
Yes. If you deploy standard local regression models or even highly complex machine learning algorithms that focus strictly on predictive correlation,
your estimates will suffer from severe endogeneity if they do not explicitly operationalize and account for spatial confounders.
Exactly. You cannot simply map spatially varying coefficients and assert causal relationships.
The math backs that up, but with major caveats. We must rigorously acknowledge the limitations of MGWFER.
Definitely. There are structural limitations.
Because of the within transformations demeaning calculus, MGWFER mathematically annihilates any variable that does not fluctuate over time.
Right. It cannot estimate the causal effects of time-invariant measurable variables.
So if your data set includes a critical variable like distance to the coastline or historical redlining status, it gets swept out of the model entirely alongside the unmeasured context.
Which is frustrating, but mathematically necessary.
Yeah.
Second, it is defenseless against time-varying unobserved confounders.
Right, as we discussed earlier.
Furthermore, the inferential statistics for this framework require significant theoretical development.
Expand on that for a bit.
Well, while the local parameter slopes inherit the robust t-statistics and significance testing algorithms from traditional MGWR,
establishing the statistical significance of the individual fixed effects themselves, the alpha I intercepts, is highly complex in a local spatial context.
Yes. The authors acknowledge that extensive Monte Carlo testing procedures must be developed to formally assess the overall spatial variability and significance of these intrinsic contextual effects.
To conclude this session, I want to leave you with a theoretical provocation drawn directly from the paper's conclusion regarding reverse causality.
Oh, this is a great point.
Throughout this entire methodology, we assumed a strict unidirectional DAG. We assumed that the covariate matrix, poverty, income, rurality caused the outcome vector, educational attainment.
Right, A causes B.
But what if the causal arrow is inverted? What if low localized educational attainment is the primary mechanism causing high localized poverty rates?
Or, more realistically, in complex spatial systems, what if they are simultaneously determining each other in a continuous dynamic feedback loop?
Exactly. Most spatial econometric models, including MGWFER, require the researcher to impose the causal structure a priori.
Right. The algorithm does not know what is causing what. It only executes the math you dictate.
The authors challenge the discipline to look beyond measuring predefined causal effects. The future of spatial econometrics lies in spatial causal discovery.
That sounds like science fiction, but it's where we're heading.
Imagine developing machine learning algorithms integrated with local spatial weighting kernels that are capable of uncovering heterogeneous bidirectional causal structures entirely from the topological patterns in the data itself.
Without requiring human-imposed assumptions.
Exactly. It represents a paradigm shift that could completely redefine how we map the causal fabric of human behavior across geographic space.
It's an exciting time for spatial statistics.
Absolutely. Keep questioning the bedrock of your assumptions. Keep interrogating the unmeasured variables in your models, and we will see you next time.